from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In Waco, Texas, on Sunday, a fight broke out at a restaurant, Twin Peaks, and then mayhem. Brass knuckles, switchblades, chains, and lots of guns. Five rival biker gangs, including the Bandidos, one of the biggest and baddest motorcycle gangs in the country, according to the FBI, at the center of the fight. It left 9 people dead, 170 bikers arrested, and a new spotlight on the gangs they belong to, on the culture and the crime. This hour on Point, the biker gangs of Texas. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are old movies like The Wild One or TV shows like Sons of Anarchy how you know biker gangs? And what do you make of this very public, very real shootout? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. It sounded like something out of an old movie, but it was real. Here's CNN reporting on the fight. This was at the Twin Peaks restaurant the day before. This was Monday.
Erupting in broad daylight. Close to 200 members of rival biker gangs broke out in a deadly fight Sunday. First fists, chains, a club, and knives, escalating into a fierce gun battle.
Lots of dead, lots of wounded. Here's a woman in the restaurant saying her family was inside when the shooting started.
My son's in there, and my husband's in there, and the Bandido gang members always think they do whatever they want to people, want to pull guns out and start shooting people.
Pull guns out and start shooting people. They're talking with NBC. Joining us first today from Waco, Texas, is Dane Schiller, reporter with the Houston Chronicle. Dane, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Sure.
So 170 arrested. Where are they all being held, Dane? That's a big number.
They're being held in the jail here, and we're told there's plenty of space. They're keeping them apart, so it won't explode in there.
Keeping the different gangs apart, 9 dead. Is it clear yet how many of those deaths came from fighting between gangs and how many might have come from police fire as they arrived on the scene?
No, it's not. And the big question is who shot who and why. We'd all like to know that. We don't know if they were all killed by fellow bikers, if the police took some of them out in self-defense.
The police suggested that could have happened, right? They're not ruling that out as a possibility.
I would think it's a certainty. I mean, policemen are trained to use firearms, and they rush into a situation where people are shooting at them, and civilians are in danger.
Is there any more clarity, Dane, on how and why this started?
All we have are 2 theories. One, that some bikers were in the men's room, and some words were exchanged, and things took off there and spilled into a bar area, and almost simultaneously out in the parking lot, a tiff began over a parking spot, and then that went up, and then the two mixed together, and the whole place went nuts.
8 Cossacks, we read, and 1 Bandido killed in the gunfight. The Bandido, though, as I understand it, the bigger gang in Texas and the more dominant gang. Was this evidence of a turf war, Dane?
I don't know. I've heard that's one of the theories out there, and one gang doesn't want the other moving into its territory, taking its business, be it prostitution, be it drugs, be whatever it is. Could just be they don't like the way each other look, but I don't have an answer to that.
What about the relative presence of these two gangs in Texas? Is it clearly Bandido territory?
The Bandidos are infamous here, and for some folks they're famous. They're all over the place, but you don't really hear about them that much in terms of being a threat to the state. In recent years here, it's all been about drug cartels and Mexico, never outlaw biker gangs.
But there's a connection, right? I mean, the connection being made lately is that they themselves are in the drug business. Is there a relationship between the Mexican cartels and the American biker gangs?
Certainly. I mean, if they're moving cocaine, for example, there's only one place they're going to get it from. It's got to come through the cartels. It's just been that the biker gangs have kept a lower profile, and you haven't had politicians and police, et cetera, speaking out about them being the danger. All the rhetoric here has always been, not always been, in recent years has been about, again, these drug cartels. And lately, their alliance with street gangs, but now we see the obvious that they're aligned with the outlaw motorcycle gangs.
Here's Waco Police Department Sergeant Business Patrick Swanson saying the biker gang problem not unique to Texas.
This can happen in any state, any town across our United States. Unfortunately for us, they chose to be here on a Sunday in Waco, Texas.
Dane Schiller, what about that? You're with the Houston Chronicle. Texas is right there on the Mexican border. Does that make the biker gang a problem, a bigger problem in Texas?
I don't know. Texas is a very large state. There's a lot of population here. There's a lot of open highways. I could see that being very appealing for gangs. Of course, you do have the source for, 80-90% of the narcotics coming into the United States to the south. I've heard that Waco may have been appealing to the bikers because it's on an interstate. They could come from many areas and easily gather here.
And what about just the presence of biker gangs? You know, there are so many out on the roads, which are not really gangs. They really are clubs, just people out on the weekend having a nice long ride. They may wear leather and the vests and all the rest, but I think we've been kind of led to see them as just weekend warriors, pretty much harmless. What about in Texas? Did this seem like a surprise, a blast from the past, an old movie? How did it strike people, Dane?
I agree with you. Blast from the past, old movie, something out of the 60s, early 70s. There are many bikers all over this state, and most of them are in clubs, and they wear something that looks like their colors, and they ride around. Even law enforcement officers have organizations, and you see them everywhere out on the roads, and they're usually very friendly, don't draw any attention to themselves, don't cause any trouble. And then, boom, we have this.
Boom, we have this. 9 dead, 18 wounded, 170 arrested. Those are all big numbers. Dane Schiller with the Houston Chronicle in Waco. Thank you very much for joining us, Dane.
Thank you.
With us now from Kansas City, Missouri, is Steve Cook. He's executive director of the Midwest Outlaw Motorcycle Gangs Investigator Association, currently a police detective in the Kansas City area. He will be in Waco next month speaking at a conference on outlaw motorcycle gangs. Steve Cook, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
How are you, Tom?
Well, I'm okay. I'm very curious about what we've just seen a little bit of here in Waco. Stand by there in Kansas City, Steve. Also with us from Texas, Denton, Texas, James Quinn, a sociologist at the University of North Texas, studied the culture of motorcycle gangs. James, welcome to On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Steve Cook, were you surprised by what exploded at the Twin Peaks restaurant in Waco?
Well, I wasn't surprised that there was an incident. Obviously, the gravity of it was a little shocking. That's the, you know, largest single incident of biker violence in world history. Prior to that would have been the Milpiera massacre in Australia, where the Bandidos and the Comancheros motorcycle gang fought at the Viking Tavern during a Father's Day event, and I believe around six gang members were killed, and so was an innocent female civilian that was just there enjoying the festivities. So as far as just a single incident, yeah, I think this is the largest.
We've got questions for you coming in already, and I want to get to them before they bike off into the sunset. KO in Kentucky. KO, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you. I was just curious. I would love to see, when the police let it out, if it ever gets out, and I doubt it will, I would like to see the ballistic reports of the supposed shootout in Waco, Texas. I want to see how many 223 and 556 casings were laying on the ground as opposed to how many pistol rounds were laying on the ground.
By which you mean how many biker rounds versus police rounds?
That's correct. You had SWAT. You had over 22 law enforcement officials in the parking lot before it broke out.
KO, what's the suspicion you're getting at there?
My suspicion is it was set up by another club, which shall remain nameless, that's a law enforcement club, to clear out Waco, Texas for them to move into the area. Now, people got to remember, law enforcement clubs are ran by law enforcement, but they have just as much illegal activity as any other motorcycle club does.
When you say law enforcement club, you're speculating here about the police recreational motorcycle club that would actually be a rival to the Bandidos or Cossacks?
Well, when you've got law enforcement clubs that come into an area and they send a letter to every club in the area that states that we are here, we will not ask your permission, we will not cow down, and if you mess with us, we will make your life a living hell and send you to prison for 20 years. What does that make you seem like? You know, and how does that make you feel?
KO, do you ride? Are you in a club yourself?
Yes, I am.
Can you tell us what club or where you tend to travel?
My position and my club name shall remain nameless. those who know me will know who you're speaking to and know I speak the truth.
KO, I appreciate your call. Steve Cook, let me come back to you. You're in law enforcement. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that's a typical biker conspiracy theory rhetoric that you hear. You know, these guys like to play this act that they're fraternal organizations and, you know, they're not doing anything wrong. But I think he made a very good point when he said that these law enforcement clubs said they aren't going to ask permission. That's really what we're getting down to here. These 1% outlaw motorcycle gangs expect other organizations to ask their permission to, you know, wear a patch and ride within their area. And, you know, it's pretty apparent that the Cossacks were done dealing with that kind of nonsense where the Bandidos were concerned. And, you know, we had a major incident breakout as a result. But, you know, yeah, are there some bad apples in police clubs? Absolutely. Are police motorcycle clubs inherently criminal? That's ludicrous. You know, there are screening processes for officers for employment. And, you know, if an officer, whether they're in a club or not, is discovered doing something illegal or unethical, they're dealt with.
James Quinn, we've got a lot to unravel here. We're into the realm of 1% and wearing a patch and Cossacks nonsense. We're going to take a short break here and come back. And I hope you'll help us unravel a lot of the lingo and the framework here. I mean, we have seen police shootings. They've been in the news all over the place lately, not usually with white bikers, which is what we had here in Waco. James, this is a big culture with a lot of its own terminology to unpack.
It's a big culture. It's got its own terminology. It's got its own norms. It's got its own way of doing business. And it's not well understood outside of its own milieu and law enforcement specialists.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the biker gangs of Texas, the bloody shootout in Waco, and what exactly blew up at the Twin Peaks sports bar restaurant there. 5 minutes in, we got bikers calling with their own theories of what's going on. It all sounds like something out of an old, maybe very old, movie. Here's the wild one. 1953, leaders of rival biker gangs terrorize a small town. Johnny's, played by Marlon Brando, baited by Chino before they get into a fight.
Hiya, sweetheart. Hey, what are you doing in this miserable gully, Johnny Malone? I love you, Johnny. I've been looking for you in every ditch from Fresno to here, hoping you was dead.
There's the Wayback Machine, the Wild Ones, but it's still in the media. FX series, Sons of Anarchy, Northern California Motorcycle Club tries to protect their town from rival gangs. Here's a scene, final season of the series. One of the gang's leaders, Jax, rallies the bikers.
I need to know this table has no doubts that every single one of you would kill or die for the man next to him, and if you don't feel that way, now's the time to speak up.
But it's real, and not just in Texas. You remember the story of that biker gang? This was on a West Side Highway in New York, 2013, chasing a Range Rover. A caravan of motorcyclists surrounded the SUV, pummeled the driver's window with a helmet, dragged the driver from the car, beat him. Here's the chase. And here, this is Saul Conejo Bravo, was working when he heard the shots that were fired outside the restaurant in Waco.
We heard a man run in and told us that there was a shooting outside. So we all got curious and we all started walking towards the window, and we saw the cops were already there and they had several of the bikers already on the ground.
A shooting outside would be a mild way of putting it. 9 dead. 18 wounded, 170 arrested. James Quinn, help us unpack a little bit of this. James Quinn is a sociologist at the University of North Texas. He's with us from Denton, Texas. Steve Cook in Kansas City, Missouri, executive director of the Midwest Outlaw Motorcycle Gangs Investigator Association, police detective. James, we heard Steve get in here with this talk of wearing a patch and the 1%. This isn't the 1% we talk about when we're talking about yachts and billionaires. What's the 1%, James?
No, this is the 1% goes way back to the founding of the subculture, and at least by legend, the American Motorcycle Association said that this characterized what a group that finally became the Hells Angels as representative of only 1% of the motorcycling public. They took that as a badge of honor in 69. They formalized it. It's enclosed in a diamond, and it indicates the 1% that want nothing to do with society and really don't want to live by its rules. They'd be totally separate from society and live in their own way with their own rules and take care of their own business.
So a badge of honor saying we are the fringe and we're proud of it, wearing a patch, James, that's about, those are the colors. That's the clothing or the emblems on the clothing and what they suggest, right?
Right. The colors are very important. These guys live and die for their colors in most cases. And an outlaw biker wears a three-piece patch. The top rocker, as it's known, is the club name. In the middle is the club insignia. And if the club is serious about it, they will run a bottom rocker claiming... Well, the bottom rocker will list where they are from. Let's put it that way, and it depends on the club what is meant by that bottom rocker. In the outer world, a bottom rocker is a claim to territory. And I am pretty convinced, just from what I'm seeing in the media, that that is the flashpoint here, because the Cossacks and Scimitars appear to be running bottom rockers, which is something the Bandidos would resent unless they had given express permission, and that does not appear to be the case. So I think that was kind of the Cossacks looking for trouble.
We'll dig in.
At least, let's say, giving a challenge.
Well, certainly trouble came. Let's dig in with our listeners in Texas. Mark in Austin, Texas. Mark, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for having me on. I was going to touch base on what this gentleman was just about to say. The Austin American Statesman this morning.
Yeah.
Suggested that there was a issue with the patch, which represented territory, which had a lot to do with the underlying tension behind which the fight broke out. I might also say, this is very important, I think, in Texas, that the discussion on open carry is they believe this gunfight to be irrelevant to the discussion on open carry in Texas. Very, very good chance that it will go to the Senate floor, very good chance that it will pass, and the governor has promised to sign it if it does pass.
Now, Mark, help us out here. Who believes what about open carry of firearms here?
Who believes that? Well, the state legislature has already passed it.
Yeah.
The state Senate is about to pass it, and the governor is about to sign it.
And that would permit more open carry in Texas, or open carry for the first time?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The only place it is not allowed, would not be allowed, would be on campus. So far, that has not, I believe that has not entered the bill, although there was a lot of controversy.
Right.
I could be wrong about that.
Right.
I think that
Mark, let us pick it up. Steve Cook, the number of guns here was very striking. It was over 100, we're told. I don't know what was open carried and what was not at the Twin Peaks Sports Bar restaurant there. How does open carry come in? And were you surprised by how heavily armed these men were, Steve?
No, not at all. Motorcycle gang members always have guns. So even in states that have extremely restrictive gun laws, they're organized crime. So they have to defend themselves, and they have to defend themselves against rivals. And, it's not typical that they're going to get caught with their pants down, so to speak, out someplace without something to defend themselves with.
Was it obvious that this was some kind of big turf settling meeting? I mean, was this set up in the first place to try and settle some conflict? Do we know, Steve?
Well, what this was most states with active motorcycle gangs have either what they call a confederation of clubs or a COC, coalition of clubs. And usually the dominant outlaw bike gang in the state kind of oversees. They'll make sure that they've got members on the board so they can kind of, control things.
Mm-hmm.
And what they'll do is they'll have all the smaller mom and pop clubs, the Christian clubs, the clean and sober clubs, the military clubs, they'll make them join this confederation of clubs, pay dues to it, and that way they can dictate to them, you know, what patches you can wear, where you can ride your bike, who you can affiliate with. And it's really just a control mechanism to keep these groups under their thumb and to keep them from communicating with another gang outside the area, for instance. You know, let's say the Hells Angels. You know, they don't want the Hells Angels in Texas. They certainly don't want a smaller group to start, you know, being courted by them and then bringing them into the state. So by having these meetings, they can kind of keep on top of everybody and, you know, make sure they know who's in charge.
Steve, when you say Christian clubs and mom and pop clubs, does that mean that the sort of real, you know, there are plenty of motorcycle clubs, which, you know, you look at them, they may wear leathers and the rest, but they're, I don't know, they're delivery men on their FedEx drivers on the weekend, or they're regular folks. My brother-in-law goes out riding on the weekends. He's by no means a gangbanger, but those clubs are paying some kind of homage or protection to bandidos.
Yeah, and that's the main problem. You know, these not all of these people are inherently bad people, but they're people put in a bad situation. I mean, for instance, if you want to have a motorcycle club and you want to wear a patch, you've got to go through the bandidos in Texas to do that. And if you don't do that, they're going to find you, they're going to beat you up, they're going to take your patches off your back and, you know, send you packing, so to speak. So most of these, you know, little mom and pop clubs figure, you know, it's just easier to go to a COC meeting once a month, pay their dues, and be left alone. And so that's, in effect, what will happen. Or you'll have groups just decide, you know what, it's not worth it, I'm not going to wear a patch. And they'll just, you know, go out and weekend ride with a couple of their buddies and you know, do their thing.
That is just wild. Weekend boyos and their gals sort of paying protection money here to bandidos. Talking with CNN yesterday, this is Jimmy Graves, a bandido member, Texas state chairman of the Confederation of Clubs and Independents. It's an outlaw motorcycle gang organization, said that the 1960s are long gone, that the media and police have it all wrong about biker gangs.
We didn't do nothing here. We're fighting for our rights. They're saying lies on TV and telling everybody that the bandidos are after police officers. That's never been.
James Quinn, what about it? We're not doing anything wrong here. Is that just a cover? Is it clear that the bandidos are straight up criminal gang?
The bandidos are heavily involved in a wide variety of organized crime at the global level. This is an international club with chapters from Australia to Europe to Canada and through the United States. That said, they did not take that many guns to a COC meeting without some anticipation of trouble. And everybody knows that there's been trouble brewing between the bandidos and the Cossacks for some time. It's about rockers. There are, I'll say, rumors, and some of them are coming from law enforcement, that the Cossacks were talking to the Hells Angels. And that alone would create a lot of animosity, because the bandidos and the Hells Angels are the two superpowers of the subculture, and they each want to rule it. This is an honor-based subculture in which reputation is everything, and it's based on bravery, bravado, and power.
Kevin in Alabama. Kevin, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks. Yeah, I tuned in a little late, so I'm not sure who the guest studio is there, but I resent the idea that there's a conspiracy mentality that's not founded amongst the bike community. I won't call them a gang. They pay dues. There's, you know, that's a very subjective term.
Okay.
I actually work with and actually work for a member of one of these bike clubs, 1%er clubs, and it's just a regular guy. I'm a mechanic. I work in a shop. He comes into work every day. Sometimes he has to go to meetings. But I would like to point out the fact that in Jacksonville a couple months ago, it was big news when the Iron Order shot a Black Piston, who was an outlaw affiliate club, down in Jacksonville, Florida, shot him in the back. Nobody stood trial for that. Nobody went to jail for that. It's because it's primarily an police officer's club. And I saw it up here firsthand with my boss. We're out one night having drinks at the bar, and the Iron Order comes in, about six or seven of them, five of which were cops, And, you know, as soon as things start to get tense, they'll threaten, they'll physically move towards you. And then, you know, they start flashing their badges whenever you retaliate. If you're not one of them and you're not an officer, then you're at a huge disadvantage. So it's not some kind of fake, conspiracy mentality that's just being drummed up by these folks around the country. There is really and truly and a heavy police bike club presence that is just as much as illegal activity as any of these other clubs, but nobody listens to that. It's typical sensational, you know, media stuff where, you know, these guys are in a gang, they're killing folks. So,
hey, Kevin, stick with me here for a second. This is kind of, this is blowing my mind a little bit. Steve Cook, please respond to this.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, facts are a great thing, and if anybody would watch the video of the incident down at Nippers Beach Club, I believe it was called, in Jacksonville Beach, you would clearly see that the Black Pistons ambushed the Iron Order member, started beating him, and he shot and killed one in self-defense. And it was taken in front of a committee. You know, they looked at the case. I personally know the investigator that handled it, and it was deemed to be a clear-cut self-defense case. So, you know, I guess the moral of the story is, you know, you know, you don't like these guys, stay away from them. And if the Black Pistons had stayed away from the Iron Order members that day, that gentleman would still be alive.
But what about, I don't want to slander anybody here, but the suggestion twice now is that the police in their off hours have their own motorcycle clubs, which both these callers have said are themselves involved in illegal activity. Evidence of that, Steve, or not?
Well, I'd love to see the case. You know, bring me a case. I'll prosecute it. If you've got, you know, police club members, first and foremost, the Iron Order is not a law enforcement motorcycle club. Just because there may be 20 or 30 cops nationwide that belong to it, I can speak for the Kansas City chapter because I've met most of them.
Okay.
There's not a single cop in it.
Kevin, what do you say?
Hey, I'm speaking for the Columbus, Georgia chapter, and it's the majority of the chapter's cops, and we have a ton of trouble out of them here, and like I said, they will ambush the club folks that I know, because there's a minority in this area, this particular town. Now you go 2 hours south and there's a huge regional chapter, but I mean, yeah, they're all kinds of trouble up here in our area, and they do initiate problems with the other club that I'm affiliated with.
Hey, Kevin, let me ask you. It's been said very plainly here that the Bandidos are and others as well engaged in selling illegal drugs, cocaine and more. Do you have any doubt about that?
You know, I don't doubt that some of the individuals there do. I don't even doubt that some of the chapters may have a hand from their leadership involved. But that's individual chapters. That, you know, there's corporations around the country that have, you know, high ranking members of their organizations that are involved in illegal activity like that as well. I guess what I'm saying is, you know, don't try and downplay the idea that there are people out to get each other in these different clubs. And the Iron Order, which I resent the idea that it's not a police club. It is a police club, but at least it is here and in majority of the towns in the southeast here that I know of. And I've had personal experience as well.
Kevin, we've got it, and I appreciate your call very much. James Quinn, quoting here former Bandidos member Edward Winterhalter, he says, look, you know, you get a few guys whacked out on meth, and everybody wants to help their brothers out. That's how a fight starts. But he says most of the guys, 60, 70%, just regular guys. They've got jobs and families, don't get involved in crime. Do you buy that, James?
I'm not going to get into the numbers. I don't have any accurate numbers in front of me. Ed's point does have truth in it, just like the caller who said he knew a mechanic who was just a regular guy, but also a little 1% patch.
Yeah.
The members of these clubs are on a spectrum, so to speak. Some of them are just kind of normal blue-collar tough guys that want to ride, play with motorcycles, and be with their buddies. And they're willing to go through what it requires to be in one of these clubs.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. Glad you're joining us for the On Point podcast, sponsored by Audible.com. With Audible.com, you can listen to many of the books we feature on the show while driving, on the train, wherever you want. Talk about multitasking. They have over 180,000 book titles, plus magazines and newspapers. And now, On Point listeners can try it for free.
go to audible.com/onpoint and get a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial. Just go to audible.com/onpoint, download a free title, and listen. It's that easy. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the biker gangs of Texas and beyond, the bloody shootout in Waco, and what blew up at the Twin Peaks restaurant sports bar there. 9 dead, 18 wounded, 170 arrested, all kinds of guns and chains and switchblades and even brass knuckles. Talk about a blast from the past. Steve Cook is with us. He investigates what's called outlaw motorcycle gangs. James Quinn is a sociologist at the University of North Texas with us from Denton, Texas. We're going to go in a moment to look at Jade Helm 15, all the talk, conspiracy talk about U.S. military maneuvers planned in Texas and the Southwest. Larry in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Larry, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
How you doing, Tom?
Okay, what do you see, Larry?
Well, I retired from the club. I was with the Pagan Motorcycle Club for almost 20 years.
The Pagan, okay, yep.
All through Philadelphia, New York, all over.
Mid-Atlantic, yep.
You have your four major clubs that pretty much run the country, which are the Pagans, Angels, the Outlaws, and the Banditos. And you've got other clubs moving up, you know, as far as like Sons of Silence, you know, Mongols.
Okay.
I mean, it's no big surprise because, I mean, every time you have any type of conflict, like military, you get a lot of vets coming home, and then the clubs expand, and they start looking for more and more area. You know, it's just common. When I joined the club back in 93, I'd come home from Somalia. You look for that same brotherhood and same type of people, you know, to have your back that you wanted in the military. About 90% of your 1%ers are ex-military.
Huh. Larry, I understand that desire for brotherhood, especially after, intense experience in the military. But when you say they're looking for area, what exactly do you mean, Larry? Do you mean area in which to sell drugs or just to ride and wear your colors?
It's everything. I mean, you got dealers in every club. I mean, that's going to be, you got drug dealers, you got gun dealers, you got prostitution, you got racketeering, you got extortion. You got everything. I mean, that's just part of the club. That's not going to change.
So forget all this talk about how it's just guys having fun. This is crime, you're saying?
It's a business.
A business.
I mean, realistically, that's what it is.
So what should society's reaction be? Same as with any other criminal business? Crackdown?
It's basically going to be that way anyway. I mean, that's the way it should be, and that's the way it's going to be, but it ain't going to change nothing. More and more of these clubs are getting more and more members with more and more soldiers and that coming home. They're expanding, so they need bigger areas. You've got more members, so you can take control of more areas.
Well, this is
Far as the one guy you were talking about, as far as police clubs, I mean, being up in Philadelphia and Long Island and all that, I've dealt with a lot of the police clubs, the Blue Knights, the Punishers, which are all county cops, and they're just as dirty. I've bought so many guns off of them and bought dope off of them that they had confiscated off of people we told them about. I mean, it's all one hand washes the other in that.
Larry, you are a font of information, and I appreciate your hanging in on the phone. I know you waited, and I appreciate your sticking with us. That is all fascinating. Thank you for calling from Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. One more right here. Patrick, Dedham, Massachusetts. Patrick, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
You know, I was thinking in terms of the media coverage, you look at what happened in Baltimore after the Freddie Gray incident, and then you look at something like this, and I'm just not hearing these folks called thugs. I'm hearing them referred to as, you know, club members. I'm not hearing the focus on them, you know, causing this kind of havoc in their own territory, whereas I feel like that was definitely the focus or the narrative of the media coverage throughout the coverage of what happened in Baltimore. And I don't really think that focus, you know, leaving out the rather not focusing on the racial aspect. I mean, these folks sound like they were overwhelmingly white.
Yep.
And nobody's really talking about it.
Patrick, we'll pick it up right now. Steve Cook, should we be calling this out after? I mean, you were there in Kansas, in Missouri. You saw the coverage of Ferguson. You saw Baltimore. Should we be talking about white crime here, white thugs? Would that be equivalency?
Well, I mean, crime is crime, but, you know, if you want to call these people thugs, I'm on board with that because they are. They're bullies. you know, yeah, I mean, I don't think that one area should get, you know, hammered with negative press against another. They're both bad situations. Nobody wants to see that happen anywhere. But, yeah, I mean, you know, for this is something I've done for 22 years. You know, these are bad guys. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And, you know, your guest, Larry, I, you know, really appreciate hearing. Matter of fact, I'd love to speak with him sometime, you know, off the air. He's a smart guy. Yeah. At least he acknowledges the facts of the life, you know, and didn't sugarcoat it. So, you know, that's the thing. I mean, you know, people are going to call these groups whatever they want to call them. But at the end of the day, you know, these guys join these gangs for a reason, and that reason's to pad the pocket.
Getting it real here at On Point. James Quinn, what about the racial profile of the gangs active in Texas?
They're largely white Anglo. The Bandidos have a few people with Spanish surnames, but they are required to be pretty anglicized to even be considered. These groups are, first of all, I would say they are not middle class. They tend to come from blue-collar backgrounds. They are generally pretty racist, and most of them have bylaws forbidding the forbidding blacks and other minorities from joining. And on top of that, in many cases, they have informal links to white supremacists, and that is one aspect of the gun trade between bikers and others. To say that they're thugs, yes, they are bullies, they enjoy power, but I'd like to take the military connection a little further. These clubs cultivate ex-military members for their skills, for their loyalties, and people that enjoyed combat situations in the military but resented the discipline feel drawn to these clubs. And that creates a situation where you have people that enjoy being in a state of war and feel a very intense, you could almost say insane, loyalty to the group.
I have to say, I did not know quite how interesting this was going to be. What about the gun law, carry, open carry laws in Texas and how they factor in here, James? You just got a minute with you.
I don't think it would make a huge difference, because so many of these 1%ers are convicted felons, so they could not openly carry. But beyond that, I think the fewer guns we can have out there, the better. I think if there had been some way of checking for guns going into Twin Peaks, this might not have happened. I realize that these are going to be the last guys to give up their guns. That is absolutely true. But if you can get more guns off the street and make that a priority, particularly out of the hands of these kinds of people, particularly these high-caliber automatic weapons, that is going to at least make incidents like this less fatal, less dangerous.
Well, that would be something. 9 dead, 18 wounded, 170 in custody, arrested and charged. Those are big numbers. We'll watch to see how that sorts out. You all have been very helpful in giving us some insight here. James Quinn at the University of North Texas. Thank you very much, James.
My pleasure.
And Steve Cook at the Midwest Outlaw Motorcycle Gangs Investigator Association out of Kansas City, Missouri. Steve, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
In a moment, the latest on Jade Helm 15, a special operations military exercise that has put people, some people on edge in Texas. This is On Point. Federal troops are set to head into Texas and six other southwestern border states this summer. Military exercise known as Jade Helm 15 is been organized as a way to sharpen troops' skills in combat and terrorist control, the Pentagon says. It's caused some uproar and flurry of conspiracy theories in the Lone Star State. The governor there directed the commander of the Texas National Guard to monitor the exercises. Joining me now with the latest on Jade Helm from Sioux Falls, Iowa today, where she's traveling with the likely presidential contender and former Texas Governor Rick Perry, is Christy Hoppe, Austin Bureau Chief for the Dallas Morning News. Christy, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
What has looking at the polls here, a fair number of Texans and maybe beyond have gotten concerned about this. What's got people so worked up about Jade Helm 15?
Well, I think, Americans have loved conspiracy theories for a long time, going back to space aliens at Roswell and Area 51, or the moonwalk was a hoax filmed as a movie soundstage. But, the President Obama has given rise to a number of conspiracy theories because he is held by many Republicans with great distrust and disdain. The Obama was born in Kenya. There was Obama is a Muslim, and now that he heads the special, he's commander in chief. I think a lot of that has spilled over to distrust of any kind of military operation he might command.
But this isn't just guys sitting at the end of a bar. This is Texas Senator Ted Cruz asking the Pentagon to clarify what they're up to. This is Texas Governor Greg Abbott saying he wants the Texas National Guard, State Guard, to monitor this. What does the Pentagon say they're up to exactly with Jade Helm 15?
They are saying this is a special operation using top elite forces to train, just like they have trained for years. This one will be a special operation. It's going to go over the summer and last 8 weeks. It will involve them some mingling with civilian population. It is to train them for the special operations they might encounter fighting terrorism or the kind of guerrilla warfare that we're seeing throughout the world. And I think just because they're calling it special has led to ideas that, this even involved the theory that tunnels are being built to abandon Walmart to house these. Walmart has had to defend itself and shut it down. So when you're talking about the military and Walmart, you don't have too many more staunch icons of American society.
Why is this operation being held in the Southwest? Is this related to concern of potential? The Islamic State likes to make a big noise. You had, of course, the attack outside Dallas in Garland not long ago. Is this related to talk or speculation about terrorists trying to come across the Southwest border?
I'm sure some of it is. It's taking place in seven southwestern states, so that has probably given some rise. Most of those states are pretty conservative red states, so that also probably is feeding this. But it's not just in Texas. Traveling with former Governor Perry, he has tackled that question almost daily in his travels through Iowa, people concerned about Jade Helm. And I think this is, the Rasmussen poll that came out 2 weeks ago showed that 45% of Americans are concerned that the government will use military training operation to impose greater control over the states. So I think this is a wider spread concern than just the Texas. It's just that the Texas governor decided to answer that concern by saying he's going to call out the state military to oversee the national military. It's a little wacky.
Has the Pentagon responded to that? Are they going to cooperate with Texas State Guard looking over their shoulder as they carry out their military maneuvers, exercises here?
Well, there won't be a physical presence of the State Guard. The State Guard is there to, as the governor said, facilitate communications between what the U.S. military is doing and the communities. All the communities involved in Texas have given permission for this operation to happen, and they have been, briefed by the military. The Pentagon has taken special efforts to send people down to talk to community groups. Those who have open-minded about it, I think, are somewhat assured. Those who, see this as a major problem and a potential takeover of Texas are not going to be dissuaded.
Christy, forgive me, but you mentioned the Walmart business, and people who haven't followed this may not understand what you were talking about there. What is the Walmart reference that you brought up?
Yes, thank you. It's The conspiracy theory regarding Jade Helm has been spread on the internet through some very conservative websites, and those that have, you know, certainly partaken in conspiracy theories before. This is about that they noted that there is a number of abandoned Walmarts that are undergoing construction or plumbing problems or whatever, and they have linked them to the states where the operation will be held. So part of the theory that has, you know, taken hold is that there are underground tunnels being built between these Walmarts that will be used for staging operations and confiscating guns and holding prisoners.
Funny time we live in. I mean, you can't have traveled in the United States over the years without having seen National Guard on the road or even military exercises of one kind or another. But here we are in 2015 thinking this is a threat to the American population.
Well, yes. And perhaps, you know, I think the internet gives a lot of rise to that because, you know, it's a way to, you know, bolster theories and communicate. And we did have a former state representative who served for 16 years who was very upset with the governor for what he said, that he was pandering to idiots and giving comfort to a fringe group who believes this. But, you know, the idea and the distrust of the operation has spread beyond just a fringe group of conservatives. You're hearing it at town hall meetings from one mother who asked Governor Perry, and she has a son in the military.
What did Governor Perry say?
Governor Perry has been one of the stronger candidates on the road, although he's unannounced right now. We expect him to announce June 4th, but he has basically said there's no need to worry about our military. Yesterday he said, quote, conspiracy busts have stepped over their bounds.
Christy Hopp, so, with the Dallas Morning News, we're out of time right there. We're so grateful for your time. Austin Bureau Chief Christy Hopp, thanks for joining us. This is On Point.